Now, this evening, we have an expert in our midst, as always. We have a man who has lectured at the British School of Osteopathy, the British College of Osteopathic Medicine, Oxford Brookes University, Leeds Metropolitan University. He's worked with Premiership football and rugby clubs, principally rugby clubs. He was a senior medical advisor at the 2012 Olympics. He's worked for the British Commonwealth team, for the British Triathlon team. All in all, this either means that he can't hold down a good job, or he's so good at his job that people keep asking him back. It's Tom Hewitson. Tom, welcome to APM. It's a delight to have you on the set, as always.
Thank you.
And I should also mention that Tom is the man who has literally rewritten the book on taping. He rewrote the Illustrated Guide to Taping for its second edition, and virtually all of the work in there is his. He really does know his stuff, and he knows his stuff about all types of taping as well. Tom, all our viewers this evening, when they are waiting for us to kick off this discussion, have been watching a picture of you with an impish grin on your face in front of three Olympic medals. Now, I know you were at the 2012 Olympics, but begging your pardon, you do look as though you're a little past your Olympic prime. What was all that about?
Yeah, I am a little bit past my prime. I have to correct you. I wasn't a senior medical officer there. I was part of the manual therapies team as an osteopath and part of the central medical team at the Olympics. Yeah. We treated the mayor of the village, because the village is massive and it had a mayor, and she promised that we could see the medals, because we didn't get a chance to see any of the sports or the events. So her, I don't know what you'd call him, her secretary brought the medals over and we took pictures with the medals. It was very late at night, it was very hot that evening. I took loads of pictures and that was the best one of the lot.
But they wouldn't let you wear it?
No, they wouldn't let us wear it. It's bad luck for anyone other than an Olympian to wear a medal.
Well, it's bad form as well, isn't
it? Yeah, probably bad form as well.
Yeah. But you, obviously, I mean, you've done an awful lot with sportsmen. You've done an awful lot with sports tape and other tapes. I was going to start with talking about kinesio tape, but perhaps you'd like to tell us, you know, what are all these different types of tapes?
It can be very confusing, Stephen, when you look at the tape market, and kinesio tape at the moment, we'll get to that in a minute. The claims that are made on it can do everything, including making the bed and making tea for you in the morning, apparently. We have to dispel some of those myths and say what it's good at and what it's good for. There are lots of different tapes out there. My book is particularly on sports taping. It doesn't have any K-tape or kinesiology tape in there. It's just sports taping completely. So if I start with some sports tape and say what the differences are in those tapes, and then we can spend a lot of time and answer some questions on K-taping and when I'd use it, when I wouldn't use it. And the reason I want to do that is because sports taping is only useful when you're actually working with sports people, and the techniques are very limited for clinic application. With K-tape, I use K-tape every day in my clinic, not on every patient, but it's incredibly useful in as an adjunct to my osteopathy.
And you use the term K-tape to describe kinesio tape as well as rock tape. Are there other brands as well?
Yeah, there's several other brands on the market. Mueller, rock tape, kinesio tape. Kinesio tape is a branded trade name. Mm-hmm. So it's a kinesiology tape, meaning kineo, meaning movement for kinematics. And it allows great movement. It doesn't restrict any movement. And this is the biggest difference between it and sports tape. Sports tape restricts movement and allows movement within a very restricted range of motion, where K-tape doesn't restrict movement at all, and it allows a large amount of movement. In actual fact, one of the things that claims that are made on it is fluid dynamics, and one of the things you want is that pumping action of movement, so it allows that to occur. Sorry, did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. I basically, K-tape describes all those different types of tape.
Yeah, it does. There are lots of different styles of tape coming out. Yeah. So there are lots of confusing different styles of tape coming out. Yes. But if they're using K-tape, it's a K-tape technique, even though somebody will have put their own name to it or brand on it. If it's K-tape, it's a K-tape technique. If it's a sporting tape, it's usually zinc oxide and or elastic adhesive bandage. Zinc oxide tape would be this style of tape here, this white tape, and that's a rigid, non-giving tape. It's very, very tough, and it will restrict movement in a joint. Whereas kinesio tape isn't. It's highly elastic. So if I just tear a bit of that there, and you can see it's highly elasticated. Yes. Yeah. So that allows for movement. in the tape.
Okay. You've got some other stuff here as well, haven't you, which may have heard or be familiar with.
Shall I start with this one?
Yeah, start with
I'll tell you why I'm going to start with it. This is a cohesive bandage. So if somebody comes into my clinic with an acute sports injury, there's usually some swelling going on. I don't do too much in the first 72 hours. I allow the inflammatory process to take place, and then I'll start some treatment. I do like to start treatment early, and treatment will include this. This is highly elasticated, but it's not sticky at all. This sticks to itself. This is the stuff that I'm not very good at equestrian sports, but this is, they use this stuff on horses. It's easy tear. It's now stuck to itself and I can't open my fingers. It comes off really easily. You roll it up, you put it in a kit bag and you can reuse it. It's very cost effective. So that's the type of thing that I would use as a compression bandage. Put it on, tell the individual if it's creating problems with circulation or it's compromising the nerve supply, you're getting pins and needles, then take it off, loosen it off, and then do it back up again so it's comfortable for you. Yeah. It's really easy to use that.
You said you'd only use this stuff on sportsmen, but anyone can come in with a sprained ankle.
Anyone can come in with a sprained ankle. And
it's quite useful stuff to have.
Yeah, I have lots of this stuff in. Yeah.
Can I assume, because that's not adhesive tape, at least not to anything else, that it doesn't provoke a reaction in skin?
No, there's no allergic reaction to that whatsoever that I've ever seen. Someone somewhere probably have one, but I've never seen one when I've applied it to people.
Right, so we've got cohesive bandage.
Yes.
What else have you got?
The zinc oxide, as I said, the main difference in the glue in the zinc oxide tape as opposed to the kinesiology tape is the zinc oxide tape is a latex-based glue, usually. And that you can get allergic reactions, or many people will get allergic reactions to that tape. This tape is used to restrict range of motion, almost like a plaster of Paris if you put it on tight enough. And that won't allow movement. So when we're rehabilitating somebody or even trying to stop injuries from occurring, we would use a zinc oxide tape.
So actually, I wasn't aware that the adhesive was latex-based until this evening.
Yeah.
Presumably, therefore, you are very careful about applying that because people can go into a full-blown anaphylactic reaction to latex.
Yeah. So one of the things that I would do is I would ask them if they have any known allergies to Band-Aids or anything like that, or any other glues. And even if they don't, while I'm treating them, I'll take a small piece, and this is an easy tear tape, and I'll take a small piece and put it on the skin and then see if there's a reaction. And if there is, we get it off pretty quickly and we wash it, wash the skin. But I do that with most of the tapes anyway.
Yeah. But for most people, it will be a very minor short-term reaction.
Yeah.
If it's anaphylaxis, people need to be very, very careful.
Yeah, I mean, not everyone's going to know that if they have an anaphylactic reaction to tape or not until they try to tape. And unfortunately, with all the best will and intentions in the world, we won't know whether they are or not until they actually have one. But most of these tapes are pretty innocuous nowadays. The glues aren't always latex.
Yes.
They're pretty good glues. But you can use something like this, which is an underwrap tape. This is not sticky at all. It's like a very thin sock that you would put on the skin first. But you still have to get contact on the skin with the tape. Mm. So we still have the problem of there being a possible reaction. So this would be an underwrap tape, or you could rub on a second skin or spray on a second skin.
I always puzzled with the use of underwrap, because given that the purpose of zinc oxide is to restrict the range of motion of a joint, as soon as you stick this stuff on, you've lost an awful lot of that control, haven't you? Because all you're doing is restricting the underwrap.
You might as well tape onto the sock, as far as I'm concerned. It is good for decreasing reactions if people have known reactions, but the problem is you lose the effectiveness of the tape that you're trying to achieve. It will still have some effectiveness, but it won't be as effective if you're using this.
Yeah.
So I tend not to use that. I would opt for a spray-on second skin, which then you can tape over, and you get the right amount of stickiness to the tape.
I remember, I don't know if it was you that taught me this, but I remember when I was working in a rugby club, the most common use for that stuff was holding socks up.
Yeah. I don't know if the camera can see my leg, it probably can't.
Hopefully
but
not.
I'm going to lift my leg up. What we tend to do is wrap it round like that. It sticks to itself. Roll it up. And it holds a sock up. You see, it's holding up my trouser leg. The big problem
is this the first time we've had to do this on camera.
I'm going to come back to this. See my red socks. I'm going to come back to this because what we'd normally do is we'd run out and we'd grab a pair of scissors and we'd cut the tape off of the sock. And the kit manager would have the hump because the socks are worth about £30 a pair. and you cut through the socks and they really don't like it. So what I would do is we put that on, put your finger underneath, pull it like that and it's gone. Yeah. So that's what I use it for, a rugby. Yeah. I tend not to use electrician's tape because you have to cut it off.
Yeah. Okay, where do we get to? Have you got EAB here as well?
I do have some elastic adhesive bandage. So, first off, that would be for first aid for compression bandage. Mm-hmm. We would use zinc oxide as the business end to restrict range of motion. And as they're coming out and they're getting better, we would probably opt more for an elastic adhesive bandage. And this is, just as it says on the tin, it's elastic, it's adhesive, and it's a bandage. And that's pretty much it. So I use this for holding on my zinc oxide tape because sometimes in sports it can ruffle up and come off and become uncomfortable. So I will hold it in place sometimes using elastic adhesive bandage. But when we're treating and rehabbing, sometimes I'll use that because there's a bit of give and we want some give in the tape sometimes.
Okay. I have to
watch my language here. This is fixation tape. It has many trade names, but this is the type of stuff that you will see on dressings in hospitals. It sticks on most skins and it will stick on sweaty skin as well. This is incredibly adhesive. So this is what I would use as an anchor point to use my other tape on. So if I do that and take off a little bit, like that.
Do you want a hand?
Yeah, that's all right. And it's incredibly sticky. Hmm. So it will stick to almost anything. So you can be sure if you tape that onto a rugby player's shoulder, it's not going to come off too easily. So your taping technique is likely to stay on if you have that on. And it goes on very, almost like a second skin as well.
Right.
It's hypoallergenic because this is the stuff they use in hospitals for holding dressings and bandages in place.
But that's purely as an anchor point for you.
That's purely as an anchor point, yeah. I don't use it for the business end.
What about using spray-on glue for your tapes as well? Because I remember when I was doing this, it didn't matter how fresh the tape was, how recently bought it was, I used to find zinc oxide would come off very easily. The glues never seemed to work very well. So we used to spray on glue underneath them.
Totally depends on the make of tape. Mm. The Americans tend to like to use spray-on glues.
Yeah.
In Europe, we tend to like the tape to be sticky. Yeah. The problem is if you've got a really sticky tape, then the problem is it becomes friable and it needs to be in a cool garage or somewhere stored because extremes of temperature affect the tape and it becomes useless very quickly. If it's too sticky, then it becomes unusable.
Has it got shelf life even in those conditions?
Yeah, it will do. I don't know what the shelf life is, but it will have a shelf life even in those conditions. So I would use an adhesive spray. So if I'm working on a rugby player who's going to get really sweaty, then I'm going to spray that. I'm going to use the fixation tape as an anchor point, and then I'm going to tape him up so the tape will stay on.
Right, okay. So can we move on to the pretty coloured ones now?
The pretty coloured ones? Which one's that? This one?
We've done that one. So now we've got the K-tape.
K-tape. So we'll move on to the K-tape. With K-tape or kinesiology tape, it's highly elasticated. There are lots of claims made on this, but there's not a lot of research to back it up. But there is a growing body of evidence for K-taping. I use this one. This is a company called Ultimate Performance, and I use Ultimate Performance tape because that roll is $4.99. I buy that roll for. You can pay anything up to £25-30 for a roll, depending on the tape you go for. With the branded names, I don't want to say the branded names, but if you're going on the branded names, then they're going to be more expensive because if they see this, what they'll say is, we do a cheaper tape. It's not about being cheap, it's about being cost effective. Mm. If I'm using this in clinic, I don't want to have to pass the cost of this on to my patient. So at £5 for a roll, I'll get 5 or 6 treatments out of that. And then that becomes cost effective because I can absorb that pound or 80 pence into my clinic time. But if that's £25 a roll, that's £5 a technique, and I can't absorb that. I'll go skint very quickly if I don't pass on the costs, and patients just don't want the extra cost. So I try and buy a cost-effective tape that will work as good as the so-called more expensive ones and better ones. This is a cotton weave, and the cotton weave isn't waterproof, but the acrylic glue, which is hypoallergenic, it's not allergenic, it's hypoallergenic, is waterproof, so they can wear this in the bath or the shower. with the zinc oxide tape and the cohesive, not the cohesive, the fixation tape, the zinc oxide tapes and the elastic adhesive bandage, they have to come off immediately after the sport is finished. We don't leave them on overnight, because if there's any inflammation, they don't give. Yeah. It will cut off the blood supply, or cut down the blood supply, and it will compromise the nerve supply as well. So we remove that immediately afterwards. With this tape, we can leave it on for 5 days. Your next question should be, why 5 days, Tom? Excellent question, Stephen. It's left on for 5 days because any of the research that's been done over a 5-day period. So it would be reasonable to say nobody knows what happens in days 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Well, I do, because patients just leave it on. And sometimes I'll leave it on for a week, come back and say, I took it off 5 minutes before I came here. Can you retape me? I don't like doing that because it will have an effect on the skin. So the skin will become friable underneath and you may damage the skin. So I like there to be 2-3 days without the tape on so we can make sure we're not going to damage the skin.
Okay. You were telling me earlier on that quite apart from being a different glue, there's a different pattern to the adhesive.
Yes, there is.
So what's that all about?
Well, the zinc oxide has glue across the whole width, top to bottom, left to right side. And it's quite a sticky glue, but it's all over completely. And it's a non-elastic tape, this one. With this tape, what we find is, I don't know if the camera's going to pick this up. Maybe if I hold it up against me, it might. No, I don't think. Oh, it will. Look, if I do that, you can see there's a sinusoidal wave of glue, no glue. And what happens is that allows for the elasticity in the cotton weave, cotton mixture, and it stretches. What we're told is when you read some of the books and you go on some of the courses, they'll say in order to activate the glue, you have to rub it down and heat it up. But that's incredibly sticky. That's already activated. And if you do need to activate it, you can activate it by rubbing the glue. But I doubt the efficacy of activating it. And one of the things that it's claimed to do is improve fluid dynamics and lift the skin from the underlying interstitial tissues. But if it does that, if we're rubbing it back down again, all we're doing is pushing that back down. So I tend not to do that. It sticks quite well anyway, so yeah. I tend not. If the skin's properly prepared, they don't have grease and oil on the skin, they're not too hairy. Even some people will shave. Sports people definitely shave the skin so they can get the tape onto the skin properly.
Yeah. There are sceptics around about the current fashion, if I can call it that, for colourful tapes, which are generally K-tapes. And you've talked about people saying that you have to activate the glue and things like that. Is there a certain amount of bollocks being talked in the subject, as well as perhaps...
You said I wasn't allowed to swear. And some of them people out there know that I do let slip every now and again. So, there's lots of rubbish talked about the tape, the claims on what it can and can't do. Like I said, some of the claims are way outlandish there. One of the big claims is that it can improve performance. But it's never actually been shown in research to improve performance. Most of the research that's coming out about the performance side of it is showing that it doesn't improve performance at all.
Right.
One of the things that it does do is decrease pain, and it's been shown to do that in several studies.
Yeah.
And it's been shown that it will improve, in certain studies, fluid dynamics. But you have to see who's writing the studies. Some of these studies are coming out from the people who produce and sell the tape. So there will be an element of bias. I don't want to accuse them of bias, but they will always be accused of an element of bias.
Yeah.
But there are some good research, not even in the sports world or a clinical world that we work in, but with people with cerebral palsy, there's been some work done, and people with stroke, there's been some work done, and there's some positive things coming out about this.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
you're quite right, there's still a load of rubbish.
I want to go back to that bias question, and I do want you to carry on with that, but I don't want to lose that thread, because any serious analyst looking at some research will automatically infer that there is bias if it's the manufacturer who's done the research. But we have to expect that the only people doing this research are going to be the people with a financial interest in it, because no one else is putting money into it, are they?
Yeah, that was
so
true.
It's not unfair.
Was true in the beginning. When I wrote my book, there really wasn't... K-tape was making its headway in Europe, but it really wasn't the fashion, if you like. It's now the fashion. And there was very little written on it. And in fact, the first course I went on, they said, if you're a lab rat and you want the research evidence, there isn't any.
Yeah.
So pretty much they were making it up as they go along.
But just because they may be biased doesn't mean the research
is rubbish, even if it's biased.
But you were talking about cerebral palsy. And
So there has been some research done in those areas, and this tape has shown some positivity.
Okay. I have some questions of my own about that in terms of, first of all, you said it lifts the skin, and I'm struggling to see how tape can lift the skin.
Okay. Again, this is theory.
Yeah.
Okay. This is not hard and fast research.
Right.
So here we go. The theory is, and some of you out there might be thinking, okay, what's the difference between K-tape then and Jenny McConnell's neural unloading and or Ron Alexander's functional fascial taping, because they lift the skin and they concertina the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that they all work the same way. In the concertinaing of the skin, they're lifting the underlying interstitial tissues, which allow for an increase of fluid dynamics and blood flow away from the area. So I'm not going to stand up. I'm going to do it here. Just going to pull my shirt apart here, show my manly chest. The theory is that when we stretch the individual, or we, in this case, stretch the tape and we place it on, when we take it off, that happens, the concertinaing in the skin. And those convolutions are, the theory is, lifting the interstitial tissues, allowing for fluid drainage underneath.
Right.
Now, if you go on YouTube and you go on Google and you look up bruising and K-tape, you'll find all these lovely pictures of where people have been K-taped, and when they take the K-tape off, the bruising has disappeared from underneath. So that is the theory. That is, if you like, I don't want to say living proof because it might not be, but that is the theory of how that works, is it will increase fluid dynamics underneath the tape to decrease the amount of bruising or take away the exudate after injury.
Well, you actually preempted off one of our first questions, which was, does K-tape work on bruising? And you talk about fluid dynamics, but of course just puckering the skin is a static process, but presumably what we've got is that the skin is constantly being stretched and then concertinaed again, so we're getting a pumping action, effectively
absolutely.
Just helping to drain the underlying tissues. The other question is, you sort of covered this a little bit, I mean, how did you apply, or does K-tape work on hairy people or animals?
Yes, I'm going to sound like I'm an anorak going online and looking at tape. I am a bit of an anorak going online and looking at tape. Pretty much what I'm really interested in is the neurophysiological effects of tape and how that works on the body. If you go on cat and tape online, what you'll find is people people are sticking tape on their cat and seeing what the cat does. So the cat will react to the amount of tape that's on it in different ways. If you put it on its back, it will crouch on the floor and it will not stand up. If you put it on its side, it will walk sideways. It won't walk forward. So people will do this. So that got me thinking, yes, it's quite funny if you think that kind of thing's quite funny. So what neurophysiological effect does the tape have, if any? Because this is a fluid dynamic effect we're talking about with bruising, and it depends completely on the extent of the bruising. And a grade 3 hemorrhage, I wouldn't be taping for. But maybe down the line, as they're recovering and they're getting better, maybe I'd consider putting tape on for bruising. But it's a completely different technique, if you like, because you need to go where the lymphatics drain to, say into the groin, and you would go from the area of damage to the lymphatics in the groin. Say the knee was injured, we would put the tape back up this way.
Right, okay. And of course, you touched on it earlier on. In this, in applying K-tape, you're stretching the tape to apply it to the skin, rather than with sports tape, you're generally stretching the skin to apply the tape and keep the skin rigid.
Yeah, what you want to do is with sports tape, you get the area to be taped in the position you want to keep it in, and you apply the tape and it stays in that position. With K-tape, that doesn't happen. What happens is you can either stretch. If I stretch this way, you would stretch the skin and apply the tape without any stretch whatsoever. Or you could stretch the tape and bring the ends together to offer, a little bit more support. So there are two different ways of applying it. But most K-tapers, and courses and books will suggest that you stretch the individual and apply the tape. But I come from the sports taping world where we were tightening everything up. So I'm kind of using a bit of both and see what happens. I think what I'm trying to say is I'm experimenting with it still. Even though I've been taping for the last 20 years, I'm still using, experimenting and trying to invent different ways of using
tape. And of course
tape.
your experience is greater in sports tape because K-tape hasn't been around for...
Out in the 1980s, a chap called Kenzo Kase. He's an American, Japanese-American chap. And it was used by the Japanese squad in Seoul in 1988, I believe. Okay. So it's been around for a long while, and then it's kind of crept up and crept up. Mm. There was a stage where they were not going to allow tape, K-tape, to be used in Olympic disciplines or sports because it was thought to have this ergogenic aid effect. We now know through research that that's not true. It doesn't have an ergogenic aid effect, but it will decrease pain and discomfort. It works quite well. In some cases, it's almost a minor miracle.
Okay. So you mentioned... Let's start from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Whenever I've seen K-tape applied, it comes in pretty patterns as well as pretty colours. I mean, is there a science behind the patterns, or again...
this is the Union Jack one. Yeah. So this one was designed for the Olympics, basically. Yeah. I managed to get a snippet of it, and that's the bit that I've kept from it. It's just to look aesthetically pleasing.
Well, I meant the patterns on the skin. I mean, here you've got a U-shaped piece of K-tape.
This one is this is pre-cut, pre-sized. I think you need a degree in physics to be able to apply that to an ankle. But this is for an ankle tape. This is a Mueller-type tape. And these grey pieces, I don't know if you can see that, are actually shimmering, and they light up in the dark. So maybe you want to be seen running in the dark. But then why would you have black tape? Should be high-vis yellow, probably. This is what I call pre-cut. So it just snaps off. You don't have to cut it. You can just divide it down the middle. But the reason I don't like using the pre-cut is I like to cut mine to the length that I want to use. So I don't. If I'm going to cut the tape, why would I use that and then start cutting it? I've just cut the tape that I want to use. But they are helpful. Sometimes they're time saving. If you're in a rugby changing room and you've got 30 guys to get ready, then you want to use as little time as possible doing the taping.
Okay. I'm still pursuing that issue when I've seen
aesthetics.
It's applied. Not the aesthetics, but the science of the pattern it's applied to against the skin.
Yeah.
Is there a science behind or a theory behind that? Why you would put a particular pattern on the lower back, say, as opposed to just stripes of tape?
Yes. So if we, as I did earlier, I'll use another bit. If we were trying to lift the skin, not concertina this time, but just to lift the skin, so we might stretch the tape. I never touched the tape. We might stretch the tape and put it on somebody. We never stretch the ends. Mm-hmm. We take those off and allow them to lie down because we don't want to pull the skin and tear the skin. Yeah. And what happens is it should lift in the middle. So if we've got a trigger point, we're trying to lift the superficial tissues. This is the theory. Trying to lift the superficial tissues to decrease the neurological input into the trigger point. We can talk about the neurophysiology in a minute if you like, but does it work? It's never worked for me, but on trigger points, but it does decrease pain sensation. If you're stretching someone and laying the tape on, when they stand back up, it should concertina. That lifts the skin, and that should decrease the amount of inflammation, hopefully decrease the amount of pain sensation.
It's, the question that's come in here is it possible to get a combined effect if you mix the different types of tape that you've talked about this evening?
I'm pretty sure and everyone must be watching the rugby, surely. So if you watch the rugby, you'll see both types of tapes being used. Mm-hmm. You'll see zinc oxide tape on the knees, and then on the thigh you'll see K-tape. I think it's wonderful that they're working in unison together. Yeah. And yes, we will do. When this first came out and I went on a course, the guy said, your style of taping is dead. It'll never be dead because this cannot do what that does and this cannot do what this does. So there's room for both and they work very well together, incredibly well.
Next question.
Yep.
This person says, I treat animals. Can any taping work on agility dogs or show jumpers?
I don't know. I haven't got a clue, is the honest answer.
Do you know of anybody who is using it on those species?
I don't know anybody is using it. Apart from the idiots on YouTube that are putting it on their cats, I don't know anybody who's using it on animals. Great question. Maybe there's a PhD in there for somebody. So thank you very much for asking the question. Pursue that avenue. Keep going. I would say probably you might want to remove some of the hair before you tape because you might want to get it on the skin. But I don't know is the answer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, let's come back to your theme here. Let's talk about the neurophysiology then. How is this relieving pain?
This came up quite recently with a patient who's got a severe disc bulge at C5, C6. And the surgeon, she's got to have surgery. And the surgeon sent her to me and said, is there something you can do sort of pre-surgical just to keep the pain at bay? And I opted for tape because it's a soft option. And if I go prodding and poking, I didn't want to make her worse. And her question to me 4 weeks down the line was, where's my pain? Because the bulge is still there, the biomechanical changes are still there, the anatomical changes are still there, but where's the pain? So it really isn't a simple answer. And we could spend the rest of the time here talking about the neurophysiology of it. So I'm going to try and put it into a nutshell. Your brain will monitor every aspect of your body every split second of every day. But it sees pain as danger. It doesn't see pain as pain. We've given it the name of pain. It sees danger, not pain. So it travels along certain pathways, the pain signal. It's exactly the same signal as tickle, but the brain perceives tickle as being fun, and it perceives other signals as not being fun, as being danger. So the four fibre types, the main four fibre types, are going to be the delta and C-type fibres. These are the ones that are small, unmyelinated, and they carry pain. And the large ones are the alpha and beta-type fibres. These are big, heavy, myelinated fibres. The small-type fibres travel at about a metre per second. So it gets, it sort of makes its way into the central nervous system. The big fibres travel about 200 metres per second, so they get in there quickly. And these are the touch-type fibres. They get in there quickly, and they start altering the pain gate. They're already in pain, so the brain's inducing endorphins and cephalines and cannabinoids to start controlling the pain. We then put on something that's different, and the brain says, oh, what's that? So it takes its onus off of what's going on, and it looks and says, what's that? That becomes something new. Is this dangerous? Can it kill me? Can it eat me? This is what the brain's doing. And I'm oversimplifying something that's incredibly complex. So this is a distraction from the pain, if you like. And we know distraction therapies work with pain, but they only work while you're using them. And as soon as you stop using them, the pain may come back. So the tape goes on, and it gets to the central nervous system first, and it shuts the pain gate, if you like, because the fibre types are bigger, they're more powerful, they override that pain. That's one of the theories, in a nutshell. A vast oversimplification of a very complex system. I do apologise.
Which is very similar to the theory of TENS, of course.
Yeah,
which is
TENS would be something very similar. Yeah. So what I normally say to patients is, and they say, well, why don't my clothes cause the same effect? It's because your brain is used to having your clothes on. Yeah. And I'm going to mention for everyone now, your foot in your shoe or your slipper if you're at home, you don't feel your foot in your shoe or your slipper until I mention it. Now I mention it, everyone can feel their feet in their shoes and their slippers. And if I say your backside on the chair, you now feel your backside on the chair, but you don't feel your foot in your shoe any longer because your brain switched from one to the other. So when you feel pain, pain is all persuasive. It keeps invading the body and the brain, and this starts to happen. The pain can't see anything else. The brain can't see anything else but the pain. The tape comes on, and the brain does that. It starts looking around. So you start forgetting about the pain. But that will only be short-lived, and this is where the 3, 4, 5 days comes in, is where the brain will get used to it very quickly and the pain will return. What my patients tell me, it's not something that I've made up, is they will say, I never know when I've got the tape on because you forget about it within minutes, but I always know when I've taken it off because it feels different, everything feels different. That tells me that there has to be some form of neurophysiological effect. There's no research to prove this at the moment, but these are the theories that are being put forward for this tape.
I'm surprised you should say that accommodation effect takes 3 to 5 days, because I mean, if you're using TENS, they would argue that you really want to use modulated TENS and change the frequency very rapidly in order to prevent the body accommodating to the signal and therefore feeling the pain again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tape is not doing that. Once it's on, it's on. It's the same stimulus for the brain for 3 or 5 days.
Yeah, your brain gets used to it, though. It's almost like having a jacket on or a shirt on. Your
so
brain
gets used to
it and it ceases to be effective.
Exactly. But it takes 3 to 5 days. That really surprises me.
In some cases it can. Mm. In some cases it doesn't work at all. You put the tape on and they're still in pain the following day. And they'll ring up and say, I'm still in bits, I'm still in agony. And I normally say to people, if it's itchy, if it's causing discomfort, if it's making the problem worse, take it off. Don't leave it on. Don't say, he's told me to put it on for 5 days, so I'm leaving it on. Take it off if it's causing a problem. Because if there is going to be an allergic reaction, it's going to be pretty quick. And if it isn't, if it is going to help, it'll help pretty quickly. And if it isn't going to help and it's going to cause a hindrance, take it off. Don't leave it on.
Yeah. How long, in addition to the fact you can spend a lot of money on branded tapes, like Kinesio tape or Rock tape, I don't mind using the brand names, you can also spend a lot of money training to apply the tape. Is there a huge amount of science behind it that you need to learn, or could you buy a book such as the one at your feet at the moment and pick it all up for yourself?
Nobody needs to have a certificate of taping in order to put tape on people. So you don't need to go on a university college course to do 3 years in becoming a taper. Anyone can tape. Mums and dads do it all day, every day. So anyone can put tape on. So I would start with a tape, your husband, your wife, your daughter, your son, your friends, and I would put tape on people. Mm. Get yourself a good book, go on YouTube, look up the sites, and see what different people are doing. Some very good people out there doing some great work in taping techniques. I'll be brutally honest with you, 20 odd years I've been doing this, I still go on YouTube and say, is there something new for me, something different, another way of approaching this?
I'm going to dig this book up for a second, because you mentioned this earlier on.
Cumbrick's book.
Cumbrick's book. And I think you said there are three references in here about the philosophy, the theory, the proof behind the tape, and they are?
They're in German, and I think one of them is in German and two of them are anatomy. So there's nothing on there on the neurophysiology of how the tape works.
Right.
But I've looked on sites recently, I'm forever looking on different sites, and it's starting to evolve now. People are starting to recognise that there is a theory behind the neurophysiology, behind how the tape works with pain.
But anyone,
yep.
practitioner, therapist, osteopath, sports therapist, patient,
yep.
could get a book like this, look at it, buy some tape and follow the instructions and see if they get a result.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it wouldn't matter whether some of it was pink and blue or whether it was all the same colour.
The colours are supposed to be pink for girls, blue for boys. It really is that sort of whichever one you like. I have a patient who plays tennis. Her tennis outfit is pink and black, and she wants to be taped in pink and black, basically, to go with the tennis outfit. But that's the colours are meaningless. The tapes are exactly the same, so it isn't the black one's the strongest, which is what most people think. Mm. The tan one is the most popular one in my clinic because people don't want it to be seen.
Yes.
I have to say,
but a lot of people do want it to be seen. Don't they?
Footballers usually want pink tape and want it to be seen. Athletes don't mind what colour tape you use, but you know, a lot of people want to try and hide it.
Having said that you kind of. Again, you've kind of answered this question, but you can develop it as well. The question is it okay for patients to use this on themselves? You know, it's a patient who, this person has a patient who keeps rolls at home in order to support a weak ankle.
Yeah.
Now, I kind of feel if they're supporting a weak ankle, they're probably talking about sports tape, not kinesio tape.
This kinesio tape is used on weak ankles as well because it allows full range of motion. And that's the type of thing that I would say to do at home. Mm-hmm. If you need tape to do your sport or train, then you should be getting it applied by somebody who knows how to use it and what they're doing, and it should be removed immediately after the sport.
Yeah.
Is it okay for them to do it? Yeah, I recommend that patients come in, bring your husband, your wife, your partner, your friend, buy a box of tape from me, or buy a box of tape from somewhere, and I'll show you how to tape it, so you don't have to keep coming back to me.
Yeah. And that's really good patient handling, isn't it? We talked to Tim Watson a few months back about electrotherapy, and he said the trend now is in...
He's the one to talk about the neurophysiology.
Well, indeed, but he was talking about the trend now in ultrasound machines is for domiciliary ultrasound. Personal use ultrasound.
Yeah.
Because you need it so frequently that the patient is getting a much better treatment if they can do this frequently to themselves.
To themselves.
And, of course, they feel better because you've given them good advice and you're not charging them the earth.
Absolutely. They'll always come back and recommend all their friends.
As you emphasise, yes. And as you emphasised earlier on, with K-tape particularly, you're not getting better tape because you spend £25 a roll as opposed to...
Not necessarily. The jury's still out on that. And one of the things that I'd like to do in research is to find out if there's any differences in the... does the backing, this, not the glue, does the cotton weave or the silk weave or whatever weave they use, does it make a difference to the individual's problems? Mm. But there are so many problems that it makes claims for. So I would start with pain probably and say, does the cotton weave make a difference rather than the silk weave? Do the colours make a difference? Because we know there's going to be a placebo effect with it. Indeed. So if you're pleased with the colours and you've got this lovely, you know, British Bulldog one on, or you've got one that's plaid that looks like Pringle on or something like that, then you might feel better. I feel better because the tape's on and it's a colour I like. Then that placebo effect may actually help the patient to get better. But placebo is not a nasty word. It's a clinical entity that we should be using.
Well, I've always, again, going back to sports tape, I mean, I've always felt that a lot of the tape that's applied, particularly by rugby players, is there because they feel they should have some tape on. You know, little bands of electrical tape around the wrists, I think, largely probably don't do very much, but they like to have them on. If they didn't, their performance would probably be lower.
I talk about this in my taping lectures. The psychology of tape, that they need the crutch to be able to play. And what they'll do is a lot of players, especially young guys, they'll look at their heroes and they'll say, so-and-so tapes his fingers and tapes his wrist and he's the captain of England, so maybe I should. But what they forget is so-and-so's probably broken those fingers and ruptured tendons and God knows what else in there, so he needs the tape. So we shouldn't really be taping for no reason. It's really good as part of a clinical tool, if you're using it, it's good for rehabilitation, but it's not the treatment. It's an adjunct to your osteopathy. So be an osteopath first and use this as an adjunct. It's fantastic, but it's not the whole treatment. It should never be the whole treatment. You should treat them osteopathically first and use these things secondary to that. So a lot of people will use ultrasound TENS or acupuncture or dry needling, and that's fine. I use most of those as well. But I would say I use them as adjuncts to my osteopathy. It's hands-on first, and then all this stuff secondary, if needed.
Yeah, and we say osteopathy, well, that's not to exclude physios and chiropractors.
Or chiropractic or physiotherapists, whatever it is your mode of manual therapy or others, do your therapy first, because that's what you're really good at, and then use these things as an adjunct,
Is there a risk that people, because these things are now on the market, will go straight to taping because it's fashionable, it's what the patient wants, and forget about the physiology and the treatment required behind it?
I really hope not. But
do you see any of it?
No, I don't. I really don't. I do with patients. Mm. They want to come in and they want to tape, and they're surprised that you won't tape them. They're surprised when you say, well, actually, I think this is going to be better for you. Perhaps I ought to treat you. And they say, well, what about the tape? Can't it just tape me up? There are some who are long-term patients. On Saturday morning, they'll turn up in my clinic and I'll tape their ankle so they can go and play rugby or football or something. But that's very few and far between. Most patients, they'll come, they're seeking your advice as a professional and they want your advice as a professional, and hopefully they appreciate your honesty and saying, well, actually, I think this is the right thing for you, because that's what they're coming for. They're coming for your advice, not just your 30-minute treatment.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to your weak ankle, not your weak ankle, but the one we discussed a few seconds ago.
Yep.
I can't see how a highly elastic tape, such as K-tape, is going to assist with a weak ankle, as opposed to the more rigidity.
It's not going to limit the range of motion in the ankle. And if we're rehabilitating and we want to limit the range of motion and we're doing proprioceptive exercises within that limited range of motion, then zinc oxide tape's the way to go. But you would take it off after the training, and you might want to put on some K-tape afterwards. The person before asked about, can you use them both together? I might take this off after training or competition and put this tape on, because it will still offer that neurophysiological effect and response. There hasn't been, as far as I'm aware, no extensive research into proprioception and this tape. So it may have a role to play, it may not. But we do know that there is a neurophysiological response, even if it's placebo, because patients are saying they feel less pain and less discomfort.
Yeah, which is beneficial. Mm. I'm not sure I quite get the thrust of this question. I'm going to ask it anyway.
Go for it.
And perhaps the questioner would elaborate if we don't answer it to his or her satisfaction.
As you probably note, all the questions are anonymous. I've no idea who they are. So, do you still use zinc oxide tape with sportsmen and women to support injured areas, as they always ask us to do? Well, I think you kind of said you do, if it needs support.
If it needs support, yes. And it totally depends on where they are in their treatment or rehabilitation. Yeah. If they need so much of this tape that they cannot train or play without it, we have to ask the question, should they be training or playing? The answer has to be no. This is part an adjunct to our treatment and rehabilitation. It should not be the treatment and the rehabilitation. Mm. So this is an adjunct to that. So we will get them to a stage where the assistance of some tape will allow them to go on quicker or able to train or play with less likelihood of re-injury. I mean, it's not going to stop an injury, but it'd be less likely to recur if that's on. And some people get used to having the tape. They want that prophylactic feeling of the tape on them, and they feel they play better. And do you know what? If they feel they play better with the tape on, we use the tape for psychological reasons. Yeah. But this tape will come off quite quickly afterwards. So as soon as they've had the shower, this comes off.
I do remember.
I hope that's answered your question.
Well, if it hasn't, if we didn't quite understand that question properly, then do come back to us. I do remember years ago, though, that I think there was evidence to show this, that zinc oxide tape became ineffective after about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Is that still the case? So in which case...
That's a paper from 1964, 65, something like that. And I actually use this in my lecture. I can't remember it verbatim, so I'm going to paraphrase it. Mm. It says that tape will lose its effectiveness up to, I think, 60% of its effectiveness after about 20 minutes. Mm. But in the 1960s, they were still boiling up dead horses for glue. And now we're using chemical glues, which stick much better, and the zinc oxide and the weaves are much better. It's a really negative way of presenting the literature, because I could say that even after 20 minutes, it maintains 40 to 60% of its effectiveness. So it's a negative way of it being produced.
But it's been trotted out a lot by the critics of taping, hasn't it, to say, well, there's no point in doing this because it doesn't work.
Because it does work. It depends on what you want it to do. Mm. And this stuff, don't forget, the zinc oxide, the sports taping stuff, is we only really want it to be effective in the first 20 minutes to half an hour, because then the body's own proprioceptive mechanism will take over, and there's evidence to support that. But it will still maintain some of its support even after 20 minutes. And it's never going to be 100% effective, but when people are warmed up and the adrenaline's running, they feel less pain anyway. And again, it comes back down to, should we be allowing them to train or play on it? And my answer would always be no. It has to be safety first, and we have to do the right thing. The problem in football and top rugby athletes, they're not human beings anymore, they're commodities. People want to play their money to go and see David Beckham kick a pig's bladder. They don't want to see him sitting on the sidelines because he's injured. So the pressure is on the clubs to keep their best players playing all the time. And if you're working with a club, you have to detach yourself from that and say, my onus is to the patient or the player, and I will do the best by them. Can I come back to that other question? I just thought of something else.
Yeah, yeah.
The question may have alluded to, should we be taping people just because they ask us to tape them? And my answer again with that would be no, you shouldn't. There should be a reason why you're taping it. Even if it's a psychological reason, I play better with the tape on, then you might want to weigh up the pros and cons of that. But I wouldn't tape somebody just because Lawrence Dallaglio wears tape when he plays, so little Johnny's going to wear the same tape. I wouldn't do that. And I wouldn't suggest you do that either.
Beginning to show your age, Simon. Lawrence Dallaglio, David Beckham.
I know. Yeah.
You're about to embark on a PhD, you told me.
I'm hoping to do a PhD. It's been in the offing for years. I did start a few years ago working with Al Lederman, a very good friend of mine, and we were looking at neuromotor control after injuries. That kind of went by the wayside because I ran out of money and time to do it, and now working at BCom, I'm a senior lecturer there, and I'm involved in research there. I figure, why shouldn't I do some research that would help me out? Yeah. And I'm really interested in the tape and what it does and how it works. So the neurophysiology stuff is what I'm really interested in.
Okay.
It would be lovely to have a paper that would show that there is some real true neurophysiological response rather than a theorised response.
Okay, so what are the specific areas you might look into in that? I mean, because obviously PhDs tend to be focused very narrowly on a given subject.
The narrow focus is going to be on tape. And I have several theories of what the tape can and can't do, and I want to put those to the test. I want to put the claims made by tape to the test as well. So this is the way. There are several ways of doing a PhD as well. So I'm probably going to produce half a dozen papers and then collate all the information together. Mm. That's my idea. I don't know whether I do. I'm 55 now. I don't know whether I've got the gumption to carry on and keep doing it. So, but it's an idea, and it keeps me awake at night thinking, I wonder if I did that, would it work? Yeah. I often think, I wonder if I put sellotape on somebody, would it have the same neurophysiological response? I'm not going to put sellotape on it because sellotape isn't meant to be used for therapy. So these tapes are, but, you know, I could patch a box up with that. I could put that on the back of my letter if I wanted to. So I'm wondering if I would have the same response no matter what sticky tape I put on back onto somebody. Yeah. That's what drives me with this.
Yeah. Give us an outline of the sort of conditions that you would treat with K-tape.
Any pain.
Right.
And I use it a lot with acute low back pains, disc injuries, sciatica, facet problems. After, if you're pretty sure it's a facet problem, and if you've done a grade 5 or a manipulation, as we would call it, a HVT, then I might tape them up afterwards as a form of support. So I would use a very different, what I would do is stretch the tape on the individual and use that support. And I would use a 4-inch tape like this. Mm-hmm. So I'd use it across, because it stretches this way. I would stretch it across the body, on the back obviously, and I would lay it down and spread it out. So when they stand up, what they get is this pulling in feeling like a corset. And most patients actually like that. There are several other techniques that I would use with that.
And a single strip of that would be enough for
single, them, I use a single strip of that usually, and if that's not enough, then I would use some 2-inch, the 2-inch tape, this one, which is 50 mil for those of you who work in French, and I would use that in a cross-like formation. Something I learned from one of the physios I worked with at the Olympics. Yeah. She showed me some excellent taping techniques. It was fantastic CPD there for anyone that worked there. And there was this lovely cross-section of osteopaths, chiropractors and physios all coming together as one. It was fantastic. So we shared some ideas and techniques.
How soon are you going to know whether a single band of 4-inch tape is enough? Will you know immediately as you come to the end of your treatment? Or will
as soon
you have
as
to
the
wait
patient tells me.
And that's going to be straight away, or will it be in a few
generally,
days before they
know? Well, don't forget, this isn't the treatment. So I'll have treated them, and I get them to stand up. I reevaluate them, get them to move around. How does that feel? And then I'll put the tape on and say, I'll put this on for support, leave it on for 3-4 days. You can wear it in the shower. The glue is waterproof. The cotton weave isn't. Dab it dry. Don't rub it dry because I don't want you to rub it off. And what they'll do is I put the tape on, they stand up and go, oh, yeah. And there's that immediate response, oh, yeah, that feels different. And it's because it is different. It's pulling on the skin. It's producing a brace or corset. Don't expect it to produce miracles. It won't. So if they come in with that antalgic posture, bent over double, they're probably going to go out bent over double with that antalgic posture. I put the tape on and I tell them it may or may not work. The chances are it will decrease some of their pain and make them a little bit more comfortable, but the treatment does that as well anyway, so I don't undersell my treatments as well.
Yeah. Okay. I remember probably from when I did a course with you years and years and years ago in sports taping. I think Rose McDonnell was the sort of the guru of sports taping.
She still is.
And so much of it was about huge, complicated basket weave patterns and things like that.
I tried to dispel that myth of open gibneys, closed gibneys, basket weaves and so on. I just got confused with it. I thought, well, this frightens me. It really scared me because one of the things that's claimed about tape is that if you're an inexperienced taper, you're going to be ineffective at doing the tape. Well, nobody's born knowing how to tape. You have to practice it. It's like doing anything. Whatever treatment modalities you use, you get better at using those treatment modalities the longer you use them, the more often you use them. So I just figured I've got to apply tape to people because I was doing loads and loads of tape at rugby. When I was at Wasps, we had, I think it was about 7 or 8 teams and 3 ladies teams when I first went there. And then when we went professional, we still had 3 professional squads. We had a first team, second team, and a development squad. So there were still plenty of players to be taped. And I just kept taping until I got quite good at it. And people saying, could you show me those techniques?
Yeah.
And that's where this all grew from.
It seems to me that it's probably more important to have a good technique because you're trying to achieve a functional outcome with sports tape as opposed to K-tape, which you can perhaps be a little bit more playful with.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm playful with both tapes. One of the things I finish off saying when I do a taping seminar or day is please invent things. Show me what you've come up with, because I'm getting a bit old and a bit staid now. And my techniques, I use my favourite techniques all the time because I know they work. But I should really be moving away from that and start inventing some new techniques. Yeah. So when K-Tape came out, when Ron Alexander came here from Australia, I was so excited to meet him and to work with Ron, because he came up with this idea. He was working with dancers in Australia, and they can't wear this great big clumpy tape around. So he put a little strip of fixation tape on and pulled tightly into directions of ease for the patient, and it worked. He didn't know how it worked. He didn't have the physiology behind it. Nobody could explain it, but it worked. And just because there isn't, because we now live in the era of evidence-based practice, just because there isn't the evidence there doesn't mean it doesn't work. I always say to students that I'm working with, absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence. Just because nobody's done the research yet doesn't mean that the technique doesn't work. It may still work. I think it's something like 70% of medicine is practiced without evidence basis.
And that's conventional medicine, yeah. not just what
not just
we
us.
Do.
Yeah, exactly.
It is important to remember. So people like Ben Goldacre will come out against anything which isn't backed up by evidence. But I think, as you're saying, if we can be fairly confident that we're not doing any harm with what we do, then it's worth trying the stuff, isn't it? And so if we're not going out with the idea that we're deliberately trying to rip off a patient to make money out of that patient, knowing full well that the treatment is ineffective. As you say, I mean, people clearly are getting a clinical benefit from taping.
I try and avoid techniques that I cannot fully understand or work out how they work myself. Mm. With taping, we use this term in science, a reasonable assumption to make. And I can make a reasonable neurophysiological assumption. I'm off to Portugal next week, and I'm going to be teaching the neurophysiological response to HVTs. And it's very similar to neurophysiological response to rubbing. There, daddy, make it better. It's not much more than that, basically. Yeah. So that's manual therapy in a nutshell. There, daddy, make it better. So there'll be red cards coming in any second now. So yeah. What's he, how dare he say that? Mr. Angry from Ricelip.
You just preempted the last question.
Oh, go for it.
They've said, have you changed your techniques over the years, or has the basic theory of taping stayed the same? You've just admitted you ought to be changing your
techniques. Yeah, I ought to be. Sports taping has pretty much stayed the same. I have tried different techniques. They've not worked for me, so I've gone back to the... That's why I got excited when Ron Alexander came over. It was something new, something dynamic. When Jenny McConnell started doing the knee taping, what she was doing was trying to do patella tracking and seeing if the tape played any difference in patella tracking. What they found was there was no difference whatsoever in the patella tracking. It's still maltracked. But what they found was there was no pain. Yeah. So I don't know if it was Jenny that actually said this, but that became known as neural unloading taping. So the neural element, the noxious input was relieved. And Ron Alexander...
This is different from pain gating, is it?
Yes. Well, it's a similar kind of theory. Yeah. So Ron Alexander was doing exactly the same thing in Australia as Jenny McConnell was doing. And there was a couple of guys in Israel doing a very similar kind of stuff. Mm. And their books are fantastic as well. I can't remember their names off the top of my head. And they were doing the same stuff. Me, I'm a copier. You show me a technique, I'll go and show somebody else the technique. I haven't invented any new tapes or any new techniques. I'm pretty good at chatting to people. And I'll show you how the techniques work. When the book came up, the original authors didn't want to update the book. They were quite happy with the way the book was. The publishers asked me if I would take a look at it. I took a look at it, and they said, could I improve it? I said, the only way you could really improve a sports taping book like this would to be produce the evidence. So that's what I brought to the table. I produced the evidence and the DVD. So I'm the short, fat, bald bloke in a cupboard with discussing how the taping works. There is a DVD that goes along with the book. Unfortunately, I don't have a book in English with me today.
No, but the book,
I'm quite embarrassed.
For the benefit of the audience, the book looks like this.
Yeah. But it should be in English. It's in Chinese, Mandarin Chinese.
So you are an international author.
Yeah, and there's another
multilingual
one.
Multilingual or not Chinese?
My Italian is very poor. I teach in Italy and Portugal and Canada.
So you speak Canadian?
Yeah, I speak Canadian fluently.
Good. Yeah, excellent.
So, which is quite good. I speak very little. I can order a pint and... order a glass of wine with dinner, and that's about it, really, in Italian, and no Portuguese whatsoever.
Right. I started you on the conditions you can treat with this, and you said you'll try anything that's painful. I mean, let's take something which I wouldn't instinctively think would benefit from taping. What about frozen shoulders?
Frozen shoulder, yeah. I've treated lots of people with frozen shoulder, and the tape doesn't work at all.
Excellent.
Nice short answer.
Well, it's a really useful thing to know, isn't it?
Because however, having said that, in the first part of the frozen shoulder, I do use it for pain management.
Well, that's where I was going with it. Does it manage the pain? I've had
hit and miss with conditions like frozen shoulder or adhesive capsulitis. I've had hit and miss. I've had some people who swear by it and I've had others who say no. So it's a 50-50. And if you were looking at the research, they'd say there's not enough evidence there to produce a positive result. And I would say so far, the jury is still out with things like that. Mm. Maybe I'm not doing the right technique. If you're doing a technique that really works, please let me know. I'd love to know. I'll copy it and then I'll make money from it.
You'll come and share it with us.
Yeah.
So when you've been treating frozen shoulder, what pattern, given that there is no evident area of pain generation, we know there are theories and speculation, where would you apply the tape?
Well, with the pathognomonic for adhesive capsulitis is external rotation or lack of external rotation. So they get pain in the anterior shoulder. Initially, it's incredibly painful. They find it very difficult to externally rotate. So as soon as they go into external rotation, there's pain. And if you bring somebody with adhesive capsulitis into the 90-degree angle of abduction, what they tend to do is they tend to go forward, not abduct. And then when you ask them externally rotate, they do this. They can't externally rotate. So what I try to do is unload that neural element by using a technique which would stretch the skin as much as they can comfortably and tape it, bringing back. And this is the theory of the fluid dynamics to try and decrease any inflammation in there and bringing the arm forward across the body. I can't because my shoulder's painful. Across the body and taping around the back this way. Those techniques are not in my book. They're in Cumbrink's book. You'll find those techniques online. That was the technique that I was showing when I went to Kinesio Tape, when I went to Rock Tape, when I went to... there's a company in Northern Ireland do it as well. And I've done several courses on these and they all show very similar, if not exactly the same technique. And the reason I use it is it tends to work, but in adhesive capsulitis, a whole different animal.
Yeah, so it's not going to improve the condition, but it might relieve the pain.
It might relieve some of the pain.
What sort of degree of pain relief would you expect on a good day with frozen shoulder?
With frozen shoulder, it's very hard to say. I use a visual analog score, scale of 0 to 10, and I've got pain down from 8 down to a 2 over a course of about 4 to 6 weeks.
But that's including treatment.
That's including treatment, absolutely. Yeah. So, but you know, that's the case that's coming to mind. But there are equally cases where patients just haven't responded to treatment, just haven't responded to the tape, for whatever reason.
Okay.
It's probably something I'm missing or doing or not doing. Yeah. But generally, there's always something we can do manually to help people.
One of our viewers would like to know a bit more about neural unloading.
Neural unloading is where it's a theory that I'm not completely au fait with. I have to, it's one of these terms, one of these throwaway terms that I throw out to make me look clever and smart from time to time. But the theory is that it would take, if I use the shoulder, for example, so as the shoulder is dropping and sinking down, it's pulling on the brachial plexus, and that brachial plexus would be under strain. For argument's sake, it isn't because it's mobile, but as the shoulder drops, it's more likely to create pain through there. So what we do is we would hitch the shoulder up and that would unload that neural pull or tethering element to it. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. We would unload the pull on the nerves. Ron Alexander does it in his functional fascial taping. Jenny McConnell was doing it with her taping. And if you look at those taping, they're incredibly similar in their effects. And if you look at some of the theories behind K-taping, it's incredibly similar in its effect and what it does. So what we would do is, the easy way to say is that when the shoulder is dropped and pulling on here, pulling on the tethered nerves, what we would do is tape the shoulder up so that the nerves weren't being pulled on. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell, neural unloading. Please don't ask me why it works. I just know it tends to work.
Is it more likely that actually what we're doing, if the nerves aren't actually tethered, is reducing the strain of tight muscles around?
We're probably doing that, reducing strain on tight muscles. It's never one-off thing. It's not, it's just the nerve. You have to affect everything that's in that area. So you'll affect the blood flow, the neural input, the muscles, the fascia, the tendons, the ligaments, the joint capsules. You're going to affect everything to a greater or lesser degree. So we're probably doing a load of that, but we have to put a rubber stamp on it, and it was rubber stamped as neural unloading.
Okay.
I hope that's answered your question.
By all means, follow up if it didn't. What's your advice? There are a lot of people who, a lot of osteopaths, chiropractors, even sports therapists probably, who don't use tape in clinic as opposed to at the pitch side. What would your advice be to them? Should they, if they think tape's appropriate, should they send their patients to someone who does a lot of it, or should they simply have a look at some online stuff on K-taping and have a go, or should they attend a course? How can they?
I would say if you're not sure about how tape works and why it works, then you should find that out first. Don't just buy some tape, stick it on, and hope there's going to be a response. You should at least buy a book and read some of the theories behind it, so you can have some theories in your head as to why you're using your tape, what effects the tape are likely to produce. It can't make your bed in the morning for you, although some of the claims of increased performance are quite massive, but that might be a placebo effect, because when it comes to looking at it, and we've done some of this at BCOM, we worked with the Olympic boxing squad looking for increased power in the punch. It didn't reproduce increased power, and we used placebo and we used sham as well.
How do you do sham taping?
Because zinc oxide isn't claimed to improve performance, and it's no given it. Mm. And so we used the zinc oxide as the sham, because it's just a rigid tape. Yeah. It doesn't claim to improve performance. And we taped them up with this, and we got exactly the same results as when we taped them with this.
Yeah.
So it didn't improve the performance at all.
Interesting. I almost would have expected that zinc oxide might have decreased performance.
We were expecting that, but we didn't find it. We went in with open mind, saying, let's see what we find. We're doing at the moment, one of my students is working with GAA footballers. The Gaelic Athletic Association footballers, and every year somebody wants to do taping because they know I'm at the college and I do taping techniques, and they say, well, can I do some research into taping? This is what led me to think, well, maybe I can get them to do all the research for my PhD. Hopefully.
It's an interesting field, isn't it? I mean, Gaelic football is a bit like rugby with added violence, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's completely amateur as well. So, these guys still go out and do it for the love of doing it. And it's a great sport. If you've not seen Gaelic football, it's well worth watching.
Yeah.
And if you like your sports rough, then it can be rough. But I find it's quite graceful as well. I know a lot of people won't do it. When they see people like this, they don't think it's very graceful. But it can be there's some beautiful moves in rugby and in those collision sports.
So is
what was the question? Did I answer the question?
The question was about telling us a bit more about neural unloading.
Neural unloading. I think my knowledge in that area is theory again. It's I think it's the shortening, bringing the areas together so there's no pulling and tethering on the nerves.
Okay. Is there more we should know then, given your extensive knowledge?
I think so. This is why I'd say
neurophysiology.
I think there is more to it than that. We really need to be looking into how this affects the central nervous system. How does this close the pain gate? How does this affect the motor neuron pool? Because we know that tape has effect on the motor neuron pool, which is where the effect of increased performance came from. Because some studies have shown increased range of motion through a muscle. My theory on this, again, there's no research on it. My theory on this is muscles work within a certain range of motion very strong, very effectively. But when the muscles go outside of that, they have to make up this gap and then become strong again. So this is ineffective, going right the way out to the ends. So a lot of the studies that have been done in this area are on jump jumping from a table and hopping forward, plyometric type stuff. And it's not been shown to increase the performance at all. So the jury's still out. You'll probably find papers now that call me a liar, that there are papers out there that say there is. But I've been looking at this for a long time. I've not found any papers. In actual fact, for today, I was going through, have I missed anything? What's the latest stuff? What should I be saying? So, but no, there's no increase in performance at all that I've seen.
What's the general, I know the pool of research is very limited, but what's the general thrust of what has been done in research so far?
It's quite positive. Initially, a few years ago, if you asked me this 2-3 years ago.
I'm talking about K-tape now.
Yeah, K-tape. If you asked me 2-3 years ago with K-tape, we would have said, it's all theory, there's no hard and fast evidence on it. There is a growing body of evidence, and it's growing very quickly. And almost every week we're seeing different papers coming out on taping, K-taping techniques and its effects. And most of them are coming out positive, we're getting some positivity. The sports ones are saying there's no ergogenic aid, it doesn't improve performance. There is some stuff on pain and decreasing of pain. There is some stuff on neural facilitation with people who've had stroke and so on. I'm not, I haven't read all of these papers, so I don't want to go down that line. So if you have some questions, please answer them yourself by going to the research and reading the papers. Right. What I'm really interested in is pain control and how I can help my patients and assist my patients with this.
Yeah. I wasn't even aware that K-tape had a role in rehabilitating stroke victims.
I think it's a fairly new thing, and it was something as I was flicking through the papers, it was one of those things that came up. And I heard a few years back about working with people with cerebral palsy and taping up the arms and see what happens. And there are some fantastic techniques out there. Do they work? Don't they work? Who knows? I'm a big fan of placebo. I love placebo. Placebo is only a nuisance in drug trials and for people like
Ben Goldacre.
Mm. Everything should have a reason. It should do.
And why can't fairness to Ben Goldacre, I mean, he's a bit of a thorn in the backside of a lot of people. But you know, he admits placebo is a really good effect.
Really good, it has a really good effect. And
there's
we should
some
be using
research
it
into
as
placebo
a clinical
effect.
Tool and a clinical entity. It's a whole other ballgame now with placebo. But it may even have a placebo effect. But do you know what? At the end of the day, I look at my patients and say, how do you feel? And they say, I feel better. I can look them in the eye. And I can say, I did a good job today because they went away feeling happy and I can sleep easy at night. Yes. What I can't do is go, I'm going to sell you some of this paper. It does nothing. If I really thought it didn't do anything, I wouldn't use it. Yeah. I can't do that. I need to like the guy I see in the mirror in the morning. And I need to be able to sleep at night. And if I was doing something that I didn't believe in or I didn't think worked, then I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of reassuring that you said that it's okay to use the less expensive tape, which you can afford to absorb in your clinic costs, rather than have a patient go away potentially feeling, well, you just sold me a gimmicky pink tape because it's fashionable.
Pattern and tapes and so on. But, I mean, some patients do love them, and to be honest, if they want a plaid one that looks like a Pringle jumper and they feel better, then I'll use that. But I'm not too sure that it will be any better or any worse than the more cost-effective tapes. I don't like saying cheap. Is what follows cheap is nasty, and they're not nasty, they're good tapes.
Yeah, which is why I said less expensive. Rather than. A question from the audience. Have you used this on arthritic joints?
I have, yeah. Which type of arthritic joints? Are we talking osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, I'm sure the audience would be happy with any of those.
I've used it on both osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. Very much so with the knee. I use quite a lot on arthritic knees. And again, I get a mixed bag of response, but mostly positive with patients. I really should start writing this stuff down and start researching my own patients. I get a mixed bag response, but generally it's a positive response. The knee is the one I do most often, which is why I mentioned the knee. Yeah. With rheumatoids, unfortunately, rheumatoid arthritis being a systemic disease, which is an autoimmune problem, that you never know how the body's going to perceive the input that you give, no matter what input it is. And one day you put the tape on and the brain perceives it as being lovely and it loves it. Next day you put the tape on, it deems it as a threat and they have a massive reaction and overreaction. So with rheumatoid arthritis, I would say I would be cautious with it and I would speak to the patient and say any sign of a reaction, get it off quickly because we'll initiate that immune response which we don't want to initiate. With osteoarthritis, most patients like it with OA, especially with knees. I use it a lot with knees.
Is there a particular pattern to the taping you use around the
knee? Yeah, it's in the books and the ones are on YouTube. I don't have a particular pattern that I use. I would use the same type of sweeping pattern around the patella that most people would use, maybe a bit over the top, maybe a bit underneath on the patella. Sometimes I will use it. What I always do is bend the knee and tape across the knee where the MCL is or the LCL is. I tend to get some fairly good results. Not everyone's going to respond to it. But the question I ask every patient when they come back is, how did you get on with the tape? Was it okay? Some are like, I didn't really do anything. That's fine. And then I won't take them. And I say, actually, maybe that tape did do something. There are some who it doesn't do anything for. But I do get a lot of patients coming back in and saying, actually, the tape was wonderful. Can you take me again before I go home today? Or I get them, as I did on Monday, I'm flying on Tuesday. Can you tape my back for me so I can have it taped for when I'm on the airplane?
The question from the audience here is, when you're dealing with OA and RA, are you talking about K-tape or zinc oxide?
I'm talking about K-tape, not zinc oxide. I would never use zinc oxide on somebody with OA or RA. What they tend to do is they tend to come in with their braces or their bandages and their socks, their sleeves, the Vulcan type things, neoprene, and I never put them off using those. But if they come in and they don't have anything, then I say maybe you ought to try something like this. I'll tape them, they feel good. And if they want a sock or what have you, then I say, well, go away and buy one and put it on and use it and see how it feels. And I've even taped somebody and then put the sleeve back on afterwards.
Tubi grip.
Or one of these Velcro, what do they call them? Vulcan,
yes,
sort of neoprene type sleeves. I've used those. But I wouldn't use this because this is going to restrict joint range of motion. And what we know with osteoarthritis is it goes away when you move the joint, or it doesn't go away, but it relieves the pain when it's moving, non-load bearing.
Again, the audience wants to go back to neural unloading.
If
it works, can you use it for neurological symptoms from cervical discs?
Yeah, I do use it for neurological symptoms of cervical discs. One of the things I'm doing at the moment is working quite closely with a surgeon, and he sends me a lot of people with cervical disc problems. The techniques are quite different. It's not the same as with the shoulder. What I tend to do is I get them to flex away. I'm going to say my disc problems on C5, C6 on the left, mm-hmm. particularly. So I would get them to look away, look down. So we'd stretch the skin in that area, and I would go as high up to the hairline as possible without pulling their hair out. And I would tape down and down the back to about T4, T5, something like that. Some people go further. And then when they come back up, we get this lovely concertina ring in the neck. And with that, if it does decrease the inflammatory process, because a lot of the time people are walking around with discs. If you read the Brink-G paper from earlier this year, I would thoroughly recommend you do that. There is a high level of disc problems in asymptomatic individuals. So the disc may not be the pain generator. So in those people where the disc isn't particularly the pain generator, then the tape will work. If the disc is the pain generator, no amount of tape's going to work because you can't get deep enough to affect that.
Yeah, which is, of course, so often the case, isn't it? We can find underlying pathologies, but it doesn't necessarily mean those underlying pathologies are the cause of the patient's
symptoms. Yeah, well, this is exactly what this paper recommends, and I'll give you the paper later so
please.
You can post it.
We'll put it up as part of the summary.
It's a very good paper. I really enjoyed reading it. A Brink-G. I know it sounds very funny to say it, but it came out earlier this year. It's a great paper, and they've got this lovely little chart. I actually got it from a physio friend of mine, and it came from his physio department. They're saying, look at this. Not everyone with an MRI scan that shows a disc bulge is going to have pain. And the question they're asking is, because I love papers that pose more questions than it answers, the question they're asking is this degeneration just a natural process of life? And do we really need to intervene when it may not be the pain generator? So for them, we need to look to see what is causing the pain. So if I'm walking around with a disc prolapse that isn't actually causing me pain, and you've got one that is causing you pain, is it the disc that's causing the pain, or is it something else? So in many cases, we know people, we've all had people with, say, sciatica, and we know the disc problem is still there, and we treat them and the disc problem goes away, or the pain goes away, but we know it's going to come back at some stage. Mm. So what's causing the pain? And for what I think, in many of cases, is it's the inflammatory process. So they'll do something silly, they'll twist their head and they'll catch it, or they'll move quickly and catch the L4-5 segment or L5-S1 segment, and there'll be a small inflammation and we'll get the sciatica. Yeah. So more and more now, doctors are saying, we're not going to MRI scan sciatic pains, we're not going to MRI scan musculoskeletal low back pains, unless there's an underlying pathology or the severe neurological deficit. So what I read into that is that we've just got to go on and do our treatments, and the patients will respond to it. And if they're not responding, that's when we go back to the doctor and say, actually, you know, we've done this treatment. If you look at the NICE guidelines, it says 9 treatments in 12 weeks. Why 9? Why not 6? Why not 12? I have no idea. Can't find it in the NICE guidelines. But we're given these 9 treatments in 12 weeks in order to help this person respond. And I'm pretty sure that if we're all honest with each other, that we would say most low back pains, most musculoskeletal problems would go away if you did nothing to them. If you said go away and take some paracetamol like the doctor does, most of these things actually will resolve. The ones that don't resolve are the ones that come our way, and they're the ones we have to actually intervene in to help the body respond to.
I do have a slightly different take on that based on personal experience. I mean, I think sometimes the pain will resolve.
Yeah.
but the function doesn't necessarily resolve. Yeah. And that in itself can lead to problems.
Yeah.
And in my own specific case, it was neck rotation. And yes, after taking my several doses of ibuprofen, the pain went away over several weeks. But 2 years later, an osteopath said, your neck doesn't rotate, and fixed it for me.
Yeah.
And subsequently, I became an osteopath. But because of that lack of rotation, of course, the effect when you're looking behind you in the car to reverse and so on is having a detrimental effect on the rest of the structure, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think it's very hard to convince the conventional world that they need to look beyond just pain resolution.
I think more and more people are recognising that, that manual therapists, osteopaths, physios, chiropractors, sports injuries therapists, massage therapists, we're all having a positive effect, and we're now becoming harder to ignore because we're actually getting some really good results. A few years ago, we did the UK BEAM study was done on the effects of manipulation and low back pain, and it came out very positive, but it sort of died a death quickly. But the NICE guidelines are, keep talking about UK BEAM and bringing up UK BEAM. And that was, again, if you haven't read the UK BEAM study, there's two of them. Very well worth reading. One was on the effects of HVT and the other one was on the cost effectiveness. Although it was more expensive because they used chiropractors and osteopaths to do the manipulations, although it was more expensive initially, long term it was more cost effective because the patients were taking less drugs, which are incredibly expensive. Yeah.
And I find that rather sad because in my local CCG is stopping its contract with private chiropractors, physios, osteopaths, and although they won't admit it, it is quite clearly it's a budget-driven policy, and yet it's purely because right now they haven't got the budget, but they can't look further ahead and say, well, this is going to save us a lot of money in the long term if we fix patients in the early stage using manual therapy, rather than letting them just get worse and end up under the knife.
Yeah, see, I'm going to get my soapbox now, and this is the world according to Tom. I've always seen us as manual therapists, I'm going to put us all together here, as the guardrail at the top of the cliff and the NHS as being the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. We don't want people to fall off. They'll fix you once you fall. So I think you could be right there. So sorry about the crass analogy, but I think we're all in the same boat. We want to do the best for the patients.
I've just been wondering, have you ever used any form of tape for TMJ pain?
I haven't personally. I would, yeah, but I haven't personally. But coming out of Malaysia now, when you see the Malaysian tapes, they send these little cards with people with looking like Batman and so on, with tapes all over the things for sinusitis, for earaches, all sorts of things. Yeah. But there's no evidence to say that actually works or not.
I suppose it would depend
on what you were trying to do with TMJ.
Yeah, whether you were trying to relieve pain through pain gating or reduce inflammation through fluid dynamics, but you could try all those things, couldn't you?
If a patient
was prepared to wear purple tape on
their cheek. It would be nice and easy because the lymph nodes are just in the neck by sternocleidomastoid and down there, and then you would go from there probably into the thoracic duct would be the way. So the drainage would be nice and easy. With the pain gate theory, you'd just stretch the tape and unload neurally. Is that word again that makes me look like I know what I'm talking about, but you've shown me up now in front of all these people.
Well, what's nice about what we do, and particularly when we talk to someone like you who is an expert, although I suspect you wouldn't like the title, is that you're able to ad lib. You don't just have to have a book that says this is what you do in this case. You can think, how can I apply the principles of what
That's what it comes down to. So whenever I give these talks, it never ceases to amaze me. People say, can you just come, don't worry about the lecture you want to do first, just come do the taping techniques. I can show a chimp how to do taping and they'll copy me.
You showed me.
But it doesn't, I didn't want to say that, I was trying to be kind. It's the theory of how it works. Therein lies the rub. If you can fully understand a technique, no matter what technique that is, then you can apply the technique knowing that it's going to have an effect and hopefully the desired effect that you want it to have. And that doesn't matter what technique you use. If people are out there using HVTs and they're saying, well, I crack the backs and people get better but I don't know why, then perhaps you ought to go back to the books and find out why. Because what you're doing is you're using hit and miss. I'm hoping the technique's going to work. So once you have the theory behind it, you can at least have a springboard from which you bounce by saying, actually, this is what I was told, this is what I believe in, this is the research I've done for myself, and this is why I'm using the tape. But just to use the tape because Tom Hewitson said so, don't do that. Go out and find out for yourself.
Yeah. every expert in the field has got some great success stories that they like to trumpet. What are yours?
Well, I'm not an expert, so it's trumped you there.
But you must have some great successes that you've had with either type of tape.
With the tape with the Zincox, sorry, with the K-tape, I'm still being amazed at the results that I get with this. It's almost like a minor miracle in some patients. In others, it's just run-of-the-mill. So this still never ceases to amaze me what's happening with this tape. I put the tape on sometimes thinking, oh, God, I hope this works. And they come back and say, it was brilliant. Thank you very much for that. And then I think, well, you know, I got away with it that time maybe. And then I put it on. Well, it worked on the last one. Maybe I'll try some taping techniques on this individual. And they'll come back and say, well, my sister is point in case. And I said to my sister, you might get a reaction. Most people don't. But if it gets itchy or hot or it's uncomfortable, it's making the pain worse, take it off, rush the skin, you'll be fine. Within an hour, she was ringing me up saying, I had to take that bloody awful stuff off because it was tearing itchy. So, you know, so we get some successes and we get some not so good successes. With the zinc oxide tape, I don't want to blow my trumpet, but there was a certain prominent England and British Lions rugby player that I used to tape up quite a lot. And I felt proud that we went and won the World Cup in 2003 and now we're out of it. No way.
But you didn't tape them this year?
No, I didn't. No.
Now, clearly, on an evidence base, that is cause and effect, isn't it?
I didn't work at the 2003 World Cup either, so. But I was. I thought, you know, maybe I played a small role because I treated some of the players that went. Maybe I played a little role in that, and some of the tape helped that. And I like to think that the tape keeps people doing what they want to do, especially the sports people when they want to do it. They're grown-ups. These are big boys and girls. And if they want to play sports, they will play sports. And if you're not applying the tape with some knowledge, then somebody else will be applying it at some stage. Somewhere.
Any words of caution? Are there dangers in using tape?
Please be your practitioner. If you're a physio, be a physio. If you're an osteopath, be an osteopath. If you're a chiropractor, be a chiropractor. If you're a sports injuries therapist, be a sports injuries therapist. Use this as an adjunct to your treatment. Don't make it the treatment. It's so easy when you're really busy and somebody comes in and says, do my thumb, tape my thumb, and just go, oh, come in, and you tape the thumb up and you send them away and say, what was wrong with that thumb? I have no idea what was wrong with the thumb. So please don't do that. Please know what's going on with the people and use it as a tool for which you can treat and rehabilitate people.
If we can sum up, because it's now time for us to call this to a close, if we can sum this up,
half an hour more.
If we can sum it, my take on this is that probably with sports tape, you need to do some form of training to make sure that your techniques are appropriate or the best techniques for restricting movement.
Find somebody who's competent in doing the taping techniques, learn from them, and practice a lot.
But I would also think the one thing that I think everyone should take away from this, if they're not already using tape, is that K-tape sounds to me as though not only is it not expensive to start trying to use it, because you can buy inexpensive but effective tape, you can read plenty of material online or buy a book on it and start to experiment without harming your patients, as long as you work on the allergies and so on, and possibly getting really good results with it. And therefore, it shouldn't be something that people should resist in their clinics.
What I would say is some of the techniques are quite way out there and convoluted, and you think, oh, if it looks difficult, it's probably going to be difficult to do. Yeah. But what I would say is try the simple tapes first. Yeah. Go and have a look at the pain management taping. Have a look at the taping for inflammation and swelling. Have a look at those types of things. One of the things that I'll show you is, this is just a straight piece of tape, this tape, and I've cut it into lines like this. And what we would use this for would be used for decreased bruising and fluid dynamics. So what I would do is I would stick the tape, I'm going to do it on my arm here, up here where the lymph nodes are, and then I would pull that down like that, and I would do this type of thing. I wouldn't go across the cubital fossa. This is what we call a high traffic area. I would just go down to it. But for this, I'm just going to do that. And I'm going to pull the tape down like that, pull it off, lay it down. And
so
you can see,
in the middle, not stretching.
Yeah, I'm stretching it here and not stretching the end. So you can see the concertina starting to pull back and up. And the idea, the theory is that it pulls up and pulls back this way and the fluid starts flowing back towards the lymph nodes. One of the things, a few years ago, one of my students who'd had a radical mastectomy had lymphedema, and she asked the oncologist, can we try some taping for lymphedema? We tried it. She said it was beneficial to her. Yesterday, when I was doing some reading around for today, I found a paper on lymphedema post-radical mastectomies, and it's showing some positive results, but it was only one paper. So it may or may not help. Just practice, play it, invent something, and then write to me or send Stephen something and say, look, I've got a new technique. What do you think?
Brilliant. Tom, thank you. That's been great.
Thank you very much.
Ladies
thank
and gentlemen,
you.
I hope you've enjoyed this evening's broadcast. I hope you've got some benefit from it. Certainly, personally, I genuinely feel that I might go out now and start using tape, because I've been worried in the past that I needed to go on some expensive course to learn how to use it. And I was worried about the clinical evidence behind it. We know that the evidence is limited, but there are clinical results that can be worked on, which could be useful in clinic. Looking ahead, we have another broadcast in a couple of weeks' time, again on pain management. I say again because we've dealt a lot with pain management this evening. That's with Tim Beams. All of the next broadcasts are on the website on the broadcasts page, so you can look those up, get them in your diary as early as you can, so that you're not having to struggle to find time out of clinic or from other social engagements. And also keep your eye open for the other things that we're trying to do to help our members. Things like we are allowing our members now to use our logo if they want to on their own personal website to say they are members of the Academy, help to reassure patients that you're doing everything you can to increase your knowledge, to be safe in clinic, to be well informed about medical techniques. And of course, if there's anything you want us to do for you, then let us know, because we welcome your ideas about who you'd like to get speaking on these broadcasts. And we would like to increase the sum of knowledge in the manual therapy community. That's it for this evening. I hope to see you again in a couple of weeks' time. Any questions, send them in by email. We'll sort you out as quickly as we possibly can. Thanks for watching.